Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 14th of September. Our guest writes in the current issue of Rolling Stone an article titled "The GOP War on Voting." In a campaign supported by the Koch brothers, Republicans are working to prevent millions of Democrats from voting next year. Ari Berman says that a dozen states have approved new obstacles to voting. Kansas and Alabama will require would-be voters to provide proof of citizenship before registering. Florida and Texas make it harder for groups like the League of Women Voters to register new voters. Maine repealed Election Day voter registration, which had been on the books since 1973. Florida, Georgia, Ohio, Tennessee, and West Virginia cut short their early voting periods. Florida and Iowa barred all ex-felons from the polls, disenfranchising thousands of previously eligible voters. Six states controlled by Republican governors and legislatures, Alabama, Kansas, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin, will require voters to produce a government-issued ID before casting ballots. And he says, it's a lengthy article, I just wanted to give you a flavor of what it's about. One of the most restrictive laws was passed in South Carolina. To obtain the free state ID now required to vote, the 178,000 South Carolinians who currently lack one must pay for a passport or a birth certificate. Under the new law, many elderly black residents who were born at home in the segregated South and never had a birth certificate must now go to family court to prove their identity. Given that obtaining fake birth certificates is one of the country's biggest sources of fraud, the new law may actually prompt some voters to illegally procure a birth certificate in order to legally vote, all in the name of combating voter fraud. Just to tell you, we do have a call in to the American Legislative Exchange Council to explain voter fraud and their concern about voter fraud in this country. That will be the subject of another show. But this hour, if they agree to be on the air. This hour, Ari Berman will be joining us, contributing writer for The Nation and Rolling Stone magazines and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. He's written a great deal about American politics, foreign policy, and the intersection of money and politics. He's written for The New York Times, editor and publisher, and The Guardian. He's a frequent guest and political commentator on MSNBC, C-SPAN, and NPR. And his first book, Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics, was published last fall. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine we'll have quite a few. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hello, Ari. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Kathleen. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We have our own situation, of course, in the state of Wisconsin, but I had no idea how widespread this is all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, once again, it seems that Wisconsin is an unfortunate model for the nation at this point in time. Really, what we're seeing is since the 2010 election, 38 states controlled almost exclusively by Republicans have introduced legislation that would make it harder for people to vote at every step of the electoral process. So making it more difficult to register to vote, making it more difficult for groups like the League of Women Voters to register new voters, cutting back on early voting, requiring these photo IDs, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, these government-issued photo IDs, that more than 10% of U.S. citizens don't have, including 18% of young voters and 25% of African Americans. And then in two states, Florida and Iowa, disenfranchising ex-felons who have served their time altogether from voting, from participating in the electoral process. So we really have now in a dozen states this really drastic, I think, attempt by Republicans to rewrite the nation's electoral rules and undermine basically one of the most fundamental rights in American democracy in advance of the 2012 election. And the constituencies that will be most affected like this, I believe it's no coincidence, happen to be traditionally Democratic-leaning voters, young people, African Americans, Hispanics, the very voters who elected Barack Obama and gave him his sweeping victory in 2008 are the same voters now who I believe will be discriminated against unfairly as a result of these laws.
Is this a nationally coordinated campaign? Did your reporting indicate that? And if so, who's coordinating it?
Anytime you see 38 states introduce legislation so quickly at the same time, it's got to be nationally coordinated. I believe a lot of it was coordinated by the American Legislative Exchange Council, otherwise known by the acronym ALEC. They are a group of a conservative advocacy group that basically groups together corporate officials and state legislators. And what we saw is after the 2008 election, ALEC drafted a mock photo ID legislation, which then became the basis, for example, for laws that were put on the books in states like Wisconsin, in states like Texas, and in a place like Pennsylvania, where legislation is still pending. And not only that, but in five of the states that passed these photo ID bills, the legislation was introduced by lawmakers who were members of ALEC. So I don't believe that ALEC is the only group behind this, but I absolutely believe that this legislation was coordinated in part by them. As Heather Smith, the president of Rock the Vote, said, I mean, we're seeing the same legislation introduced state by state by state. And that is usually something that state legislators are not able to coordinate on their own.
And we hear, and we have asked ALEC to be on, I don't know if they'll do that or not, but we have heard that the reason for all of this is to combat voter fraud. Your reporting indicates that there is very little voter fraud in this country.
Absolutely. I think this is the biggest lie now, or one of the biggest lies perpetrated by Republicans. And I'll just point to a few different facts to back up that claim. There was a major probe by the Justice Department under George W. Bush between 2002 and 2007 that looked into voter fraud, which was a high priority for the Justice Department. And out of 300 million votes cast in that period, federal prosecutors convicted only 86 people for voter fraud. So 86 people out of 300 million. And most of those cases were illegal immigrants and former felons who didn't even realize that they were ineligible to vote. And not only that, but the probe failed to prosecute a single person for going to the polls and impersonating an eligible voter, which the anti-fraud laws are supposed to stop. There was a very cogent study by the Brennan Center that put this in understandable terms, and it said that an individual is more likely to be struck by lightning than that he will impersonate another voter at the polls. So this is really something that actually doesn't exist in anywhere near the numbers that Republicans are talking about. To give you two stats, in Wisconsin, I mean, in 2004 and 2008, Republicans made a big stink about voter fraud in the state of Wisconsin. In 2004, the Republican Attorney General in Wisconsin charged only 14 people with voter fraud and won only five cases in court. That's five cases out of 3 million voters. Same thing in 2008. Again, another major probe into voter fraud. They only charged 20 people after the 2008 election with voter fraud out of 3 million votes. So you're talking about 0.0007% of the electorate charged with some sort of voter fraud. But now you have laws that could disenfranchise hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people. So I absolutely don't believe that the punishment fits the crime in this case.
Before we get to places like Wisconsin, let's go to South Carolina, where people died not very long ago for the right to vote. Now there is a requirement to pay for a passport or a birth certificate. How can that possibly be legal?
So basically, the situation now is that the Supreme Court has upheld a photo ID law in the state of Indiana in 2008, but they basically said the ID needs to be free, otherwise it's a poll tax. But the problem is, in order to get those free documents, you have to actually prove who you are. So South Carolina is an interesting situation because you have a lot of elderly black residents who were born in the segregated South. They never had a birth certificate. They never had proof of citizenship. They weren't allowed to go to white hospitals back in that time. And so they're in a situation where if they don't have access to a passport or a birth certificate, they, as you mentioned, might have to go to family court to prove their identity. And not only that, but to get that free ID, they're actually going to, in certain cases, have to pay for a passport or a birth certificate to prove their identity. And that's something that Judith Brown Dianis, who works for a civil rights organization called the Advancement Project in Washington, she calls it the stepsister of the poll tax. And a number of voting rights advocates I talked to believe that South Carolina is one of those states that decided to go beyond what the Supreme Court upheld in Indiana. Wisconsin is another one of those states, which I'm sure we'll talk about throughout this program.
Yes. In Florida, the League of Women Voters had been registering, as they do. They've been around for a long time, registering voters all over the country. They're reconsidering whether or not it would be something that they can continue to do because of what's happened in Florida, which is what?
They actually had to shut down in their voter operations, their voter registration operations, which had been on the books for 70 years. So Florida is obviously the most infamous state when we think about problems with our elections in terms of what happened in 2000. And it's pretty shocking to me that Florida is actually going back and rewriting their election laws in light of what happened in 2000. But in Florida, what happened is the Republican legislature and the conservative Republican governor, Rick Scott, made a number of changes to the election laws. One of those changes was to make it very hard for people to register to vote and for groups to register people to vote. And they had a requirement that any group of volunteer or otherwise registering voters would have to hand in registration forms within 48 hours or else face a $1,000 fine as well as possible felony prosecution, and comply with a barrage of new bureaucratic requirements that basically no volunteer group could follow. So the time and the penalties involved were just too great for any of these groups to do this sort of work. So you found a nonpartisan group like the League of Women Voters had to shut down and actually denounce the legislation as good old-fashioned voter suppression. And I believe the reason that Republicans are making it harder for people to vote is because if you look at the 2008 election, in the 29 states that recorded party affiliation, roughly two-thirds of new voters registered as Democrats in 2007 and 2008, and Obama won 70% of their votes. And in Florida alone, Democrats added 600,000 new voters in the run-up to the 2008 election. And those people who went to the polls, those new voters who went to the polls, favored Obama over McCain by 19 points. So I believe Republicans studied the 2008 election. They saw how the Obama campaign was so successful. And one of the things they did was try to cut back on the tools that the Obama campaign utilized to expand the electorate.
I know that former President Bill Clinton has been very much outspoken on this issue. Who is trying to examine this and challenge some of these laws?
Sure. Well, obviously, all the different civil rights and voting rights groups, whether it's the ACLU, the NAACP, the League of Women Voters, Rock the Vote, Common Cause, et cetera, have been very concerned about this. It's being challenged in a number of different ways. There have been lawsuits filed in court in states like Florida, in states like Missouri, in states like Wisconsin. It's being challenged by the League of Women Voters under the Wisconsin State Constitution, which guarantees the right to vote, and the League of Women Voters says that this law in Wisconsin violates that right to vote. The other thing, the biggest thing, I believe, is the Justice Department has authority in all the states under the Voting Rights Act, under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, to decide whether to clear or not to clear these changes, depending on whether they have an adverse effect on minority voters. And recently, the Justice Department sent a letter to South Carolina asking for a lot more information about South Carolina's law and whether it would present an undue burden on minority voters and what the state was doing to answer these questions. So the Justice Department is looking into this issue. There's a number of members of Congress who would like them to be more aggressive. Representative John Lewis, who was an icon of the civil rights movement, who marched with the Freedom Riders and was beaten just to try to exercise his right to vote in the segregated South, he told me that he'd like to see the Justice Department be a lot more aggressive on this issue because they really may be the last recourse in a number of states because there's not a whole lot of faith that the Supreme Court would decide any sort of decision in a way that would hurt the Republican Party at this point.
I didn't know the Justice Department had that kind of authority. Why aren't they more forceful?
Well, they want to make sure that they have all the facts. A lot of these states just submitted their briefs to the Justice Department. I think it takes quite a long time to go through this. And the Obama White House in general has been very cautious on this issue. I believe there may be an element in the Justice Department that's weary of seeming to sort of embrace so-called black issues, although I believe this is an issue that goes well beyond African Americans and affects a lot of, for example, white students in places like Wisconsin, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yes.
But we don't really know what the Justice Department is going to do, so it's really difficult to speculate. They're playing this very close to the vest. I couldn't find out any information from the Justice Department about how they're leaning one way or the other on this.
Let's talk a bit about Wisconsin. It will be, because of where you have to get these voter IDs, fairly difficult for people who don't have cars, who don't exactly know where the places are, and there aren't a whole lot of them, and they have restricted hours in the state of Wisconsin, to be able to register to vote. You have to go way out of your way, paying bus fare in some cases, waiting in very long lines to get a voter ID. And then, of course, there was this whole controversy about whether or not you're going to pay for this or not. You have to be very, very well informed and really go out of your way to get one of these IDs.
So I believe that Republicans in Wisconsin have really been a case study in bad behavior on this issue. And let me explain why. Number one, they passed this requirement for government-issued photo ID, knowing full well that 50% of African Americans and Hispanics in the state don't have driver's licenses, number one. Then they tried to ban all student IDs as ineligible. They seemingly capitulated and allowed the student IDs, but they put in a requirement that the student IDs have to match all these criteria, which no institution of higher learning in the state actually meets. So you have a situation right now where 242,000 students in Wisconsin don't have the right documentation to vote next year. And not only that, but the states themselves, I mean, the schools themselves are going to have to pay for this. There was no actually provision in the bill to pay for it. So, for example, the University of Wisconsin system may have to spend $1.6 million to print new IDs at a time when Scott Walker has just cut $250 million in education. So that's a very difficult decision that they have to make right now. And not only that, but in Indiana, where the Supreme Court upheld voter ID, they found that 99% of voters in Indiana had the requisite IDs and could turn to full-time DMVs in every county. In Wisconsin, it's very different. The state staffs barely half as many DMVs as Indiana, a quarter of which are open less than one day a month. And following that, Scott Walker tried to issue a directive closing 16 more DMVs, many of them in Democratic-leaning areas. There was a lot of pushback, and Walker was forced to scrap that plan. But basically, in every single instance, over and over and over again, you're seeing Republicans in Wisconsin making it more difficult for their political opponents to vote in the next election.
We welcome phone calls. Our phone lines are humming, as you can imagine. And here's how you reach us when somebody hangs up. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. Ari Berman has written a very provocative and important piece in the current issue of Rolling Stone, where a lot of great reporting is being done these days, titled The GOP War on Voting. In a campaign supported by the Koch brothers, Republicans are working to prevent millions of Democrats from voting next year. And he outlines what's happening all over the country, including Wisconsin, but looking at how much more difficult it will be for people to be able to vote, voter ID laws, early voting, not as long a period of time, ex-felons losing the right to vote in some states, and the list goes on. I do want to tell you that we have put a call, just so we can hear another side of why this has become necessary, considering the fact that voter fraud is just not a very huge problem in the country. So why are we seeing so many restrictions? Some of you are in favor of these kinds of restrictions, I'm sure. We'd like to hear from you, but we have also call the American Legislative Exchange Council to find out why. Why do this? Why make it harder for people to vote? To your phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we will be speaking with Matthew Paul, former CFO of McDonald's Corporation, who wrote a piece in the New Republic asking, why are the children of the greatest generation so selfish? Two phone calls now for Ari, and we will start with Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Kathleen, thank you so much for having this program. And your guest is outstanding in his research. Just phenomenal. I think this is one of the biggest problems we're going to have in the upcoming election. And I just want to say that I believe this voter fraud thing is a red herring, in that it is diverting attention. attention away from the fact that elections are actually being stolen. We're not talking about voter fraud here. We're talking about election fraud. And the problem is the bags of ballots being open and no ballots appearing in bags that were seen to be loaded with ballots. We're looking at voting machine fraud. And this is where the elections are really being stolen. And there's a group in Wisconsin called the Wisconsin Citizens for Election Protection. And you might want to contact them about this, because this is another aspect of what's going on. And I'm thankful for this guest and for you getting him on, Kathleen. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. Do you want to take on election fraud, Ari?
Sure. Well, I mean, that's another thing that's difficult to prove and difficult to know just how widespread it really is. And for that reason, I didn't get into it in my article. I will say, though, that I believe that the real problem in American elections is not the myth of voter fraud, but how few people actually participate. And we see stats like that over and over and over again, where even in the 2008 election, only two-thirds of eligible voters went to the polls, and that was the highest voter turnout in four decades. There was a study by MIT that found that 9 million voters were denied an opportunity to cast ballots in 2008 because of problems with their voter registration, long lines at the polls, not knowing where their polling location was, or lack of proper ID. And my concern is that that number is going to go through the roof in the next election. And we're going to see states like Wisconsin that have historically had high voter turnouts, where both parties were committed to the right to vote and for improving participation, that now it's going to be a very big problem in that state. And an issue that's so fundamental as the right to vote in our democracy is going to be needlessly politicized as a result.
Ari, do you think that there is legitimate debate about whether or not ex-felons should have the right to vote?
I don't believe so, because I believe if you committed a nonviolent crime, if you served your time, and then you come out and you're supposed to be rehabilitated in society, one of those rights I believe that you should be able to get is the right to vote. And that's why, for example, that a moderate Republican governor in Florida, Charlie Crist, restored the voting rights of 154,000 former prisoners who had been convicted of nonviolent crimes and served their time. In Florida, what happened is Governor Rick Scott, a conservative Republican governor, after only 30 minutes of public debate, overturned Charlie Crist's rule and instantly disenfranchised 97,000 ex-felons and prohibited another 1.1 million prisoners from being allowed to vote after serving their time. And so now you have a situation where Florida and Iowa join only Kentucky and Virginia as the only states that require all former felons to apply for the right to vote after finishing their prison sentences. And I believe that that's wrong, and that violates the fundamental principle of rehabilitating these prisoners.
Tate in Milwaukee. Hi.
Well, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question about how do we determine how much voter fraud has taken place? The argument I keep hearing is that, well, of course there aren't a lot of prosecutions because it's difficult to prosecute, difficult to find the offenders, and that it's just naive to think that there's not a lot of voter fraud going on. And this is kind of a frustrating argument to hear, because it just seems like the fact that there is voter fraud going on is an article of faith, and I'm just wondering how you recommend responding to that. Thank you.
Kathleen?
Yeah, sorry.
Well, I would just say the Bush administration did everything they could to try to prosecute voter fraud. I mean, this was a top priority for the Justice Department. So they encouraged prosecutors to be as aggressive as possible and actually sacked two Republican U.S. attorneys.
I remember that.
Hello?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I was just
in Washington and in New Mexico, who weren't as aggressive. So, I mean, they did everything they could, and they still only prosecuted 86 people for this offense out of 300 million votes. So this idea that we just can't find these people, I think, again, is a red herring, because prosecutors are going out of their way to try to find these people. I think the real problem is that it's such a rare offense, and it's so difficult to prove, even if you believe that it might exist, that actually the net effect is that really a few cases now are justifying perhaps hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people from being able to vote.
Early in your piece, you quote Judith Brown Dianis, who monitors barriers to voting. She's co-director of the civil rights organization Advancement Project. And she says, what has happened this year is the most significant setback to voting rights in this country in a century. Do you agree?
I agree, yeah. I mean, you really have to go back to the Jim Crow era to find these type of laws being passed and to find legislators being so blatant about targeting certain groups of voters. I mean, if you look at who doesn't have these IDs, who would be affected by making it more difficult to register to vote, who would be affected by cutting back early voting. Let's just take early voting as one example. In Ohio and Florida, they not only cut back early voting from 35 days to 11 days in Ohio, from Florida to 14 to 8 days, which the Obama campaign used so successfully in 2008, they banned it on the Sunday before the election, when black churches historically mobilize their constituencies. There's no reason to do that other than pure racial politics. So I believe the way that minorities have been targeted, and then in Wisconsin and other states, the way that students have been targeted are just shocking to me. And the fact that we'd specifically pick on students, the young people that we should be encouraging to vote and making it so much more difficult to vote, preventing them from having the necessary ID, presenting all these new barriers to the schools to printing new IDs, not giving them the funding. I really believe that like a district county supervisor in Madison told me, Annalise Eicher, it's creating a second class of citizens in terms of who gets to vote. And I don't think it's any coincidence that students are among the groups of people that are most opposed to what Governor Scott Walker and the Republicans are trying to do in the state of Wisconsin in terms of cutting education funding and other budget cuts.
What's difficult about this issue is that it is such a precious American right, and people have forgotten that it wasn't that long ago that women couldn't vote in this country, and people marched on the streets, and people died 50 years ago for the right to vote in this country. It is so precious, and there's so much blood that has been spilled over this.
It really is, and that's a really good point, and one I tried to make in my article. And that's why I said what's really sad to me is how this issue has become politicized. It's become politicized by the GOP. When Democrats were in control, they weren't making it more difficult to Republicans to vote. This is something that Republicans have instigated. They have politicized an issue that should be a nonpartisan issue. We should have both parties in this country committed to turning out as many people as possible. But unfortunately, I think we have a situation where the higher the voter turnout, particularly the higher the voter turnout among some of these voters that don't always turn out, so whether it's certain Hispanics or certain African Americans or young people, I mean, generally speaking, if those groups of voters turn out, Democrats tend to do better, and that's why these groups of voters are being affected and targeted by these laws. The founder of ALEC, Paul Weyrich, a very influential conservative activist, said in 1980, he said, "I don't want everybody to vote." He said, "As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down." And I believe those words have become a mantra for what the GOP is trying to do this year.
Has there been bipartisan opposition to this? Are there Republicans who are saying this is not right?
In certain states, you had a situation, for example, in Ohio, where the Republican Secretary of State came out against that state's voter ID law. As a result, Ohio now, they've made some changes, as I said, cutting back on early voting, but they don't have a photo ID law. But as a whole, not many Republicans have come out against this. You had a few instances in Florida, for example, where Republicans came out against what their own party was doing, saying there's no evidence of this voter fraud that they speak about. But generally speaking, I mean, this has been a directive that I believe came down on high from the most organized and well-funded elements in the Republican Party, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the Koch brothers, etc., in terms of to push this legislation. You may also know, of course, that the head of the RNC now was the former Republican Party chair in Wisconsin.
Yes.
So I believe that really this is something that Republicans all across the country have been very committed to doing. It was their stealth agenda after the 2010 election, and they've been very successful very quickly in carrying it out.
Helen in Waukesha, hi.
I am calling because I would like to tell you that I was born in Europe and was brought up there, and everybody has a voter ID with a picture on it, and it eliminates a lot of the problems. I do know some European descent people who came to this country even before I did, and they happily go voting in Wisconsin, and nobody asked them for anything, and they are not American citizens. So there is a reason to to have a voter ID, and thank you for taking my call.
Sorry.
So I'm not familiar with the laws in Europe. I can only speak to what's happening in the U.S. It seems that all the evidence of voter fraud in the U.S. is anecdotal, because when you actually look at the numbers, people say, oh, well, I know this such and such person voted and they weren't supposed to. But I mean, when you look at the numbers just don't back up any sort of massive conspiracy for people to illegally vote in American elections and to impersonate another voter. And if you just look at the number of people that don't have these IDs, it's much higher than people realize. As I said, 10% of U.S. citizens and 18% of young voters and 25% of African Americans. But it's not only requiring the ID, it's how the laws are written, because you have a situation in Wisconsin, like I mentioned earlier, where students would have had the correct ID, but the law was written in such a way to prevent that ID from actually counting. So you could have a situation where if you're an out-of-state student going to UW, for example, and you have a Texas driver's license but you want to be able to vote in Wisconsin, you're not going to be able to vote if you don't possess some sort of ID that complies with the law. And so you're talking about tens of thousands of students potentially that may not be able to vote simply because the way the law is written.
And I think that we need to take in and absorb what you just said about the percentage of African Americans. 25% of African Americans don't have the proper ID. That is a huge number of people.
It's a huge number of people, and it's 50% in a state like Wisconsin. And so this idea that everyone drives, that everyone has a driver's license, isn't true. And people say, well, okay, you need an ID to get a beer, you need an ID to buy Sudafed. Buying a beer and buying Sudafed is not a constitutional right. Mm. People didn't die for that right. It hasn't been passed over and over and over in the Constitution preserving that right. So, I mean, really, the right to vote is one of the most sacred rights in American democracy. And I think when either party tries to politicize voting, they should be called out on it. And the reason that my article is called The GOP War on Voting is not because I had some predetermined Democratic agenda. It's because Republicans have instigated these changes to the law in almost every single respect, and that's just something that's at this point indisputable if you look at where the laws have been passed and who's passed them.
That's a good description of it, because indeed it is a sacred right. Indeed it is. It's the fabric of this country, as other things are, but it ranks way up there. Helen, thanks for the call. Joan in Milwaukee, hi.
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 Republicans are very much afraid of the idea of class warfare, and yet it seems like our legislators in Wisconsin don't realize that if you write into the law that no technical college IDs will be honored, that's instigating class warfare even between college students, because if you're well off enough to go to an ordinary college, maybe you'll have the right to vote. But if you're going to a Wisconsin technical college, which we need more than ever in these economically depressed times, then you don't have the right to use your college ID.
Ari.
Well, actually, no matter where you go to school in Wisconsin, you don't have the right to use your ID. All 242,000 students in Wisconsin, whether you go to a technical college or you go to University of Wisconsin or you go to Marquette or wherever, that ID is now ineligible. You cannot vote with your student ID unless it includes a current address, a birth date, a signature, and a two-year expiration date, which no schools in the state of Wisconsin, technical or otherwise, actually allow. So the problem is greater than that. But in terms of who will be affected by this law, it is a form of class warfare, because poor people are going to be less likely to have that ID than wealthier people. We know that from looking at the statistics. And I believe what happened in Wisconsin was the Republicans got in there. They decided to crack down on their political opponents. So they went right after labor unions after the 2010 election. And then they decided to make it more difficult for their political opponents to vote. And one of the places where you saw people most fired up about the budget cuts and what Republicans in the state government were doing was on college campuses. And that's why I believe that students have been singled out by Republicans as one of the groups of voters that's going to be most disenfranchised by this law, unless the states and the college put up the money to be able to print these new IDs and they're accepted at the polls.
Our guest this hour is Ari Berman. He's written a piece in the current issue of Rolling Stone, The GOP War on Voting. In a campaign supported by the Koch brothers, Republicans are working to prevent millions of Democrats from voting next year, and he outlines what's been happening in states all over the country. Just a reminder to you that we do have a request into the American Legislative Exchange Council, and that, of course, asks for an hour of their time to explain why it is that they believe there's widespread fraud when it comes to voting in this country and how all of these laws will make voting better for Americans. We haven't heard from them yet. We hope that that will be the case. Or we'll find somebody from another group. Here's our number. One line is open, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Tomorrow, during this time period, we just had confirmation that Jeremy Scahill, who is from Milwaukee, actually, is confirmed to talk about the CIA's presence in Somalia. He's one heck of an investigative reporter. And the second hour of our program tomorrow, Calvin Trillin, who has a new book, Quite Enough of Calvin Trillin, 40 Years of Funny Stuff. And it's very funny stuff. Calvin will be with us, hour number two of our show. Voting this hour, and we continue. Ari Berman is our guest, contributing writer for The Nation and Rolling Stone, investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute, who's written extensively about American politics, foreign policy, and the intersection of money and politics. His stories have appeared in The New York Times, editor and publisher, and The Guardian. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to more phone calls. Connie in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. And guest, it seems as if we've been put in the situation of needing now to prove a negative, a non-existence of fraud in order to solve this, which is a pretty much logical impossibility. So instead of first proving that a problem exists and then solving it, we now have a solution, the reversal of which would require the apparent proof of a non-existence or a negative, which is really, in classical logic, pretty impossible. I'll just listen.
Thank you, Connie.
I think that it's a good point. I mean, I don't really have anything to add. That was well said.
Thanks for the call. Mitch in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to know, do they ever find out who all these fraudulent votes went to? And I'm just wondering if they ever would have found out who these people all voted for, all these great number of fraudulent votes they kept complaining about. I mean, it would be pretty embarrassing for the Republicans if they were the recipients of the votes.
That's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to that. I just know what the people were charged with. So, for example, if you look at these 20 cases of election fraud that occurred during the 2008 election in Wisconsin, six people were charged with voter registration misconduct, which wouldn't have been solved by a photo ID. 11 people were charged with being a felon, but still voting. Two people were charged with double voting, and then, this is my favorite, another was charged with obtaining an absentee ballot in his dead wife's name so he could fulfill her dying wish to vote for President Barack Obama. So I guess we know that at least one of those 20 people went for Barack Obama. But really, I mean, the numbers are so small in these cases that it doesn't really matter which party was benefiting because they're not enough to throw an election regardless. If you look at, for example, the number of people that couldn't vote, as I mentioned earlier, because of problems with their voter ID, because of problems with their voter registration, because of uncertainty at the polling place, I mean, those numbers are probably much, much higher than any sort of documented cases of voter fraud. I mean, they absolutely are much higher because you have 9 million people in 2008, and then you have, in these instances of different states, you have 10, 20, 30 at most evidence, cases and evidence of voter fraud.
Thanks for the call. Tina in Madison. Hi. Tina, go ahead. Well, I don't know where you are, Tina. Brandon in Sussex. Hi.
Hi. Very, great topic, actually. I'm currently a student at Carroll University in Waukesha. So this kind of touches on us a lot. The question I have, and this is honest curiosity, why, again, if it does require a photo ID to buy things like Sudafed or alcohol, why is it such a big idea to get a photo ID to vote? You'd figure, I guess in my case, if I have nothing to hide, then I shouldn't be afraid to show some photo ID if I'm exercising a civil right.
Ari.
Well, as I said earlier, buying beer and Sudafed is not a constitutional right. Voting is, number one. Number two, a large percentage, whether you like it or not, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, a large percentage of certain populations in a state like Wisconsin, 50% of African Americans and 50% of Hispanics, don't have that ID. And number three, student IDs, which could be used, for example, to buy other things, will not be used for voting. So even people that have this ID may not be able to vote under the way the legislation is written. And there's a third point, or I guess it's the fourth point that I wanted to mention, just in terms of how the law will be implemented. We've already seen a number of eye-opening incidents at DMVs in Wisconsin, where, number one, there was a memo that came down from the Department of Transportation saying that instead of giving voters free IDs, you should charge them $27, right, as you would in the case of a driver's license, unless they specifically ask for the ID. And I believe that could be interpreted as a poll tax, actually not telling people that they're entitled to the free ID. And then you had a situation where a mother and her son came in to try to get him an ID. They checked his bank account statement, and they said there wasn't enough activity in his bank account to justify getting the ID. And I asked a legal expert at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU if there was anything under the law that would allow a DMV worker to check someone's bank account statement to decide whether or not they should get
the ID.
And they said absolutely not.
Right.
So you could also have a situation where DMVs are wildly distorting the laws on the books, which are already bad enough.
Well, plus, you go to the DMV. It's an eye-opening experience. I think we should all have to go to the DMV every now and then to see what's going on in the world. You go to the DMV, and they're not very well staffed in the state of Wisconsin, and so you're there for a long period of time. You literally have to take, if you don't have a car, you're taking the bus, which costs you money to go down to the DMV. Sometimes you have to wait for a long period of time in order to apply for this. So essentially, you have to take a half day off work, and it's an expense to do that.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that's another situation where, I mean, the Supreme Court and federal law is very clear on this, that burdens to voting constitute a poll tax. You cannot have a burden for someone to vote. And so something, for example, you're in a situation like Wisconsin where who are the kinds of people that are not going to be able to take that day off? It's probably working class, a middle class.
Poor people, yeah.
Yeah, working poor people who aren't going to be able to do this sort of thing, to be able to take half a day, to be able to go out of their way to get this DMV. And I don't believe that Governor Scott Walker and the Republicans in the state are doing everything they can to make sure people can get this ID. They certainly aren't doing it with regards to letting students vote. They're certainly not doing it in terms of staffing these DMVs, because as we mentioned earlier, you know, compared to Indiana, Wisconsin has a quarter of the DMVs, half as many DMVs, a quarter of which are open less than one day a month. And Scott Walker has already tried to close other DMVs in Democratic-leaning areas. And so I'm not confident that people in Wisconsin are going to be protected when it comes to their constitutional rights.
An email from Kimberly. My mother has Parkinson's and can't get a driver's license. In order to get her ID, someone has to take time off work and go out of their way to get her an ID. She is not firm on her feet. It's dangerous to move her about. Don't tell me that it's free or fair.
Well, and it also, it's just not justified. I mean, there's no evidence, as I mentioned earlier, that before Wisconsin had this photo ID requirement in 2004, 2008, for example, that there was any evidence of widespread voter fraud that would justify such an ID. To the contrary, Wisconsin was always regarded as a state with very high turnout and very high civic engagement.
Yes.
And
yes,
that's going to be the chief casualty of this, as Wisconsin's exalted reputation, I can tell you, is taking a big hit nationally when people look at what's going on.
It's going to be pretty wild at the polls next year, don't you think?
It's going to be insane. I mean, we just haven't seen these changes, particularly these photo IDs, and people just aren't paying attention yet. I mean, I can't tell you how many people read my article and said I had no I had no idea this was going on. I mean, and some of these were people I thought were pretty well-informed political junkies, and they didn't even know. And when I queried voting rights and civil rights experts, I mean, they told me that instead of one single fiasco in Florida, there could be chaos in a dozen states. And so I hope people, whether they're Republican or Democrat, understand this law, understand what they need to do, and are able to vote in the next election, and in such an important election, be able to actually fulfill their constitutional rights.
And I urge people to read your piece, too. It is a very important piece in the current issue of Rolling Stone. Nancy and Barron, hi.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
My question has to do with Native American rights. And I have heard you talking about other groups, but not specifically Native Americans. When I lived in South Dakota, I knew many people on the Lakota reservations who had to go off the reservation in order to register to vote. And often they did not even have reliable transportation. And they would go through lots of difficulties, even getting a vehicle, getting to be able to drive somewhere to register. And then when they would get there, they would be told that it was either closed or the person who could register them was out of town, and they would have to go all the way back and come back another day. And they could never get reliable information on when a person would be there to actually register them. I don't know if this is still going on. This was in the 90s when I lived there, and I'm just wondering what the status is for Native American voting today.
It's a good point. It's one that I didn't mention in my article just because there was so much other detail that I had to mention. But, I mean, Native Americans would certainly fit the profile of a group of voters that wouldn't have these IDs or access to the IDs in as large of numbers as potentially other groups of voters. So I do think it's a very good point the caller brings up.
Thank you, Nancy, for the call. Is it Regan or Reagan in Fond du Lac? Hi.
Hi, it's Reagan.
Hi, Reagan.
I just want to say that there is absolutely no question that this law is specifically designed to keep students from voting. Several months ago, before the law went through, one of the senators who was working on it was on the Joy Cardeen show, and he said students don't vote in local elections. They don't do it. So there is no reason to maybe encourage them to do so. Just, you know, let's make it harder. That'll be better for the Republicans because students overwhelmingly tend to vote Democratic. And that's my comment.
Thanks, Regan, very much for the call. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Yeah, we could use a little bit of mental judo on these guys. The Republicans across the country are trying to limit average Americans from voting. Well, us average Americans should get together and start insisting that if you want to get a driver's license in this country, you have to prove that you voted. We could use the same techniques against them and make it like ancient Greece where everybody has to vote.
Ari, what do you think of that?
Well, I'm not in favor of anything that makes it more difficult to be able to vote in this country. But, I mean, I do think it's a good point. Why are we creating additional barriers to voting? What is the logic that justifies it? Where is the proof that justifies that we need this sort of legislation? It hasn't been justified. It's been implemented in such a way that's clearly discriminatory. And my hope is that people who don't have these IDs in certain states are aware of them. It's not only IDs, as I mentioned earlier. I hope that people realize that in states where there's early voting, they have to vote in a more limited period of time. In states where it's harder to register to vote, they have to figure out a different way to register to vote. And, I mean, if you're an ex-felon in Florida or Iowa, there's pretty much nothing you can do about it at this point in time. I do hope that these groups of voters will learn about the changes. My worry is that the very people who don't have these IDs may not vote at all. And what will happen is they're thinking about voting. They hear about everything they need to do to actually be able to vote. They say, okay, it's just too much of a burden. I'm not going to bother with it. And basically, they preemptively decide not to go to the polls. And I think that if those are Democratic-leaning voters, that in and of itself is a victory for Republicans. And there's no way to know how many voters will actually fit into that category come the 2012 election.
Do you see increased political awareness on this topic? I'm with the people who you talked to who said, I had no idea this was going on so extensively. Will your article get more people riled up about this? There isn't a whole lot of hue and cry about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's early. I definitely think that, you know, there will be more articles like my articles. There will be more pickup by the mainstream media. There will be more discussion about this by political campaigns. There will certainly be more discussion about this by the Obama campaign, who I think stands to lose more than anyone as a result of these changes. And I agree, it's no coincidence that of course, the President of the United States himself, his campaign could be hurt the most by laws that Republicans passed since the 2010 election. So I do believe that there's increased awareness. Whether that increased awareness is enough is hard to know. I mean, you have to repeat things over and over and over in this country to make it stick. And not only do you have to repeat it, but then you have to actually tell people, here's what you can do about it. You know, you have to talk to groups like the League of Women Voters. You have to talk to groups like the ACLU, groups like Common Cause.
And we have to stop talking because we're out of time. Ari, thank you. It's an important article. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ari Berman. The piece is in the current issue of the Rolling Stone. Again, we do have a request to Alec for a discussion of voter fraud and why they feel this is necessary. Thanks to Chrissy Peace for producing this hour.